encounter is a bathroom. I step inside, admiring the gleaming white fixtures and the multicolored toothbrushes lined up on the sink counter. Oh my God, is that a seat warmer on the toilet? Would it be weird to try it out? Yes, it probably would. For a moment, I stare at myself in the vanity mirror of the sink. This is the same mirror Kenzie uses to look at herself every single day. Except when she looks into this mirror, her reflection shows perfect cheekbones, clear blue eyes, and silky blonde hair, rather than my own nondescript features with mud-colored eyes and hair. I tap open the medicine cabinet with my index finger. It doesn't surprise me that it's filled with various skin creams and hair products. There are a couple of orange bottles of pills on the top shelf, and I pick up the first one. Ondansetron. Take one tablet 3 times a day as needed for nausea. Before I have a chance to wonder why Kenzie needs to take a pill for nausea, I turn the bottle and see that the prescription is for her older brother. Of course, Kenzie doesn't get nauseous. She's probably never vomited in her whole life. It doesn't take me long to find Kenzie's bedroom. There are several bedrooms upstairs, but one of them is clearly the master bedroom. The other seems to belong to a teenage boy, her brother, presumably. And Kenzie's is the one with the canopy bed and the large pink jewelry box on the desk. It is for real the nicest kid's bedroom I've ever seen. I sit down at Kenzie's white desk, sinking into the leather chair. Kenzie sits in this very seat, and she does her homework, and she probably just takes for granted how lucky she is. I pull open the top drawer of her desk. There's a torn piece of notebook paper stuffed inside with a note scribbled on it. I can't stop thinking about you. I can't wait to see you tonight. Ugh, just what I wanted to find. A love note from Hudson. I still can't believe he's dating her. It was so weird with me and Hudson. When we were younger, I adored him and thought he was cute in a general sort of way, with his eager smile and white blonde tousled hair. But I didn't have a crush on him or anything. We played together the way any two kids would, playing Nintendo or doing homework together. When it was summer, we would toss a ball around in his backyard, walk together to the nearest store to get candy, or wriggle under the fence to get into his neighbor's yard to use their swimming pool. But then when we got to high school, Hudson shot up in height so that he was finally taller than me, a lot taller than me. And suddenly, I started thinking about him differently. I started fantasizing what it would be like to kiss him. And I got the feeling he was thinking about me the same way. Not that it was Kenzie's fault that my best friend stopped speaking to me. That was all because of what happened with my father and what I made Hudson do. But it doesn't make it any less painful to see them together. I look over at a ceramic figure on her desk. It's a bird, painted light blue and violet. When I pick it up, I can see her initials, KM, etched into the bottom, which means that she made it in ceramics class, even though it looks professional. Kenzie is even amazing at ceramics. On a whim, I hurl the bird to the floor, where it shatters into 5 pieces. I thought breaking something in her room might make me feel better, but it doesn't at all. And weirdly, I don't feel as upset about her and Hudson as I used to. I still miss Hudson as a friend, but when I fantasize about a guy who I would like to be with, it isn't him anymore. It's Nathaniel Bennett. Not that anything could ever happen between me and Mr. Bennett. That is just beyond stupid. But I think about him all the time. At night, when I'm drifting off to sleep, I imagine him smiling at me, his eyes crinkling like they always do. The thought of him finding out about me cheating is so humiliating. There's nothing more important to me than what he thinks of me. I stand up from the leather chair and walk over to Kenzie's closet. She has a ginormous walk-in closet, because of course she does. I sift through all the sick designer labels she's got stuffed inside. In addition to being pretty and popular, She's also a lot wealthier than most of the kids in the school. It just feels like life isn't fair sometimes, you know? I pull out a pink top from her closet. The material is soft, and I can tell that it would cling to my chest in all the right places. It's about the right size, too. If I took it, she would never even know. I mean, she has about 5 zillion shirts in this closet. She probably hasn't worn this one in years. Really, I'd be doing her a favor. I'm helping her declutter. In fact, I could do even a little bit more decluttering here. And then, just as I'm sifting through her shirts, I hear a crash from downstairs. Chapter 35. Addie. Someone is home. Oh my God, this is awful. I thought I was in trouble when I got caught cheating, but this is much worse. The worst thing that could have happened from cheating at school would be to get kicked out of school, and even that was unlikely. But this is breaking and entering. I could go to jail, or juvenile detention, or whatever. This is a serious crime. Why did I do this? I had this wild idea about getting revenge on Kenzie, but all I have done is break a stupid ceramic bird and look through her closet. I don't have the guts to get revenge on Kenzie for the things she's done to me. I freeze, not sure what my next move should be. The noise definitely came from downstairs, so I'm hesitant to go down there and walk right into one of the Montgomerys. But what else can I do? I could hide. Kenzie's closet is big enough to fit me and half the football team. I can close myself inside and hope that whoever is downstairs goes away, and then I can sneak out. But what if it's Kenzie? Then I'll be trapped in her closet, and it's only a matter of time before I'd be discovered. Being found in Kenzie's house is bad enough. Being found hiding in her closet would be a nightmare. No, I've got to get out of here. I toss the keys into the closet and creep out of Kenzie's bedroom, wondering if I can quickly slip out the back door. If it's Kenzie, I'm screwed. But if it's her parents or her brother, I can pretend she sent me over here. It's not like I look scary in any way. My heart is jackhammering in my chest as I slowly walk down the stairs. Every few steps, I stop and listen. I don't hear any voices, but there was definitely a crash, and it was loud enough that it couldn't just be the wind or something like that. Is it possible that at the exact moment I broke into this house, an actual burglar broke in as well? No, not too likely. I get to the bottom of the stairs. I still can't see or hear anyone in the house. It feels like the house is empty, even though I did hear that noise. I creep around behind the stairs to the kitchen to return to the back door. And that's when I see it. There's a white, fluffy cat in the middle of the kitchen, standing beside a pitcher of water that must have been on the counter but is now on the floor. The cat looks up at me and lets out an unapologetic meow. It was the cat! My whole body sags with relief. I'm not going to get caught for breaking and entering and end up at juvenile hall. Nobody is in this house. Just an entitled cat. Still, I'm not taking any chances. I grab my sneakers and slip out the back door as quietly as I can, and I close it behind me. I ditch the keys in her closet, so I won't have any temptation to come back. Chapter 36. Eve. Addie comes into my classroom the next day like she's being marched to the electric chair. I can't help but feel a jab of sympathy for the girl. She has been struggling in my class, and I have known it. Maybe I'm the one at fault for not trying to do more to help her. In the past, when I had other students who struggled the way she has, I offered them tutoring suggestions, which is why I have written down a list of peer tutors who will work with her for a reasonable price. As soon as the bell rings for class to end, I motion for Addie to come to my desk. She looks like she would rather jump out the window, but she obliges. "Addie," I say. She lifts her eyes, which look watery. I have decided not to bring this matter to the principal, I tell her. Her eyes widen. I am giving you a zero on the midterm, I say. That is a blow that will make it almost impossible for her to pass the class. So if I have any heart, I need to soften it. And I have made a list of peer tutors. If you bring up your grades significantly by the final, I will drop the midterm grade. I hold out the list of tutors to Addie, and she takes it with a shaking hand. Thank you so much, Mrs. Bennett. I really appreciate that. I grunt, knowing that if Nate hadn't been so persuasive last night, I would be marching her to see Higgins now. But he was right. She did what she did because she was desperate, and it wasn't like she planned it in advance. I can let this slide for once. If it ever happens again, it won't. She looks like she's about 5 seconds away from getting on her knees and kissing my feet. I swear, I'm turning over a new leaf. Good. I'm willing to forgive this one lapse in judgment, but I'm not about to become friends with the girl. She's just lucky that Nate sees something in her, because God knows I don't. Chapter 37. Addie. I must have swallowed a few too many horseshoe lucky charms, because I am having amazing luck. First, I got away with breaking into Kenzie's house. Then, Mrs. Bennett decided she was not going to report what I did to the principal. I didn't even think that was possible. But she was nice to me. She didn't smile, of course. That would be way too much to hope for. But she recommended some cheap tutors that I might be able to afford. And she told me she would drop the zero if I pulled it together by the end of the semester. And now I am at the meeting of the poetry magazine. And Mr. Bennett thinks the new poem I've been working on for the last 2 weeks is worthy of being in this issue. I have been so scared Mrs. Bennett would tell him what I did, and that he would think less of me. But I guess she didn't tell him, because he is looking at me the same as he always does. I love this line, he tells me. The blood drains out of my heart with each beat. What a powerful image. I look over at Lotus to see if she's listening, but she is looking away. She was so angry about Mr. Bennett entering my poem in that contest rather than hers, she doesn't even speak to me anymore. She doesn't seem interested in being friends, which is saying a lot, because Lotus might be the only kid in the school less popular than I am. The Reflections meeting is officially over at 4:30, but the more dedicated members of the magazine usually stick around until 5, discussing poems for the magazine and just stuff we read in general that we like. Lotus is the last to leave, slinging her backpack over her shoulder and vacating the room without even saying goodbye. I'm about to follow her when Mr. Bennett says my name. Addie, he says. Hang on. I freeze, curious to hear what he has to say. I'm even more curious when he walks over and pushes the door to his classroom shut. When we're alone, he raises his eyebrows at me.
So what happened? What did Eve say to you?
It's strange how he calls her Eve instead of Mrs. Bennett. I mean, obviously he wouldn't call his wife Mrs. Bennett to her face, but it seems like he should call her that around me. But that fact is less significant than the fact that he knows what happened. She must have told him what I did. God, this is so embarrassing. I say, it was okay. His voice lowers a notch.
She went easy on you, right? She's not involving the principal?
I shake my head wordlessly. He nods in satisfaction. He tugs at his tie, loosening it around his neck until I can see just a little bit of chest hair peeking out.
I told her what a hard time you've had in the last year. I told her to give you another chance to make it up.
It all finally makes sense. I was wondering why Mrs. Bennett suddenly decided to take pity on me. It was because of him. He told her not to go to the principal. You helped me, I blurt out.
Of course I did, Addie.
He smiles at me, his eyes crinkling.
I wasn't about to let my favorite student get kicked out of school. I had to stick up for you.
My head is spinning. Mr. Bennett knows what I did, and he doesn't hate me. Not only that, but I'm his favorite student. I almost want to burst into happy tears. Thank you, I manage. Thank you so much.
Of course, he says. I only did what was right.
The rush of emotions I feel is almost overwhelming. Before I can stop myself, I throw my arms around Mr. Bennett in a massive hug. My eyes are welling with tears, and I cling to him. I never hugged my dad, not since I was a little girl, and I never even hugged Mr. Tuttle. But I never felt quite this grateful to another person before. He believed in me. He went to bat for me. Mr. Bennett hugs me back, not pushing me away even as I cling to him. The hug lasts far longer than I intended it to, but I don't want to let go of him, and he doesn't seem to mind either. But then something firm pokes me in the leg, like a roll of toilet paper. Oh my God, is that? I leap away from my teacher, horrified. I had hoped maybe I was mistaken, but when my eyes drop, I can see the telltale bulge in Mr. Bennett's pants. From the look on his face, he realizes exactly what has happened, and he looks completely mortified. I am so sorry, Addie, he cries. He turns away from me, attempting to conceal it, but it's far too late for that. This is completely... it's unacceptable. I'm so sorry. Yes, I say in a small voice.
It's no excuse, he says in a small voice. But you have to know that my wife, we have nothing in common anymore. I feel nothing for her. And then I meet you, and it's like I finally connect with someone for the first time in my life.
He hazards a look at me, his face bright red. Even when he is flustered, he is so handsome.
But that's no excuse. No excuse. I'm just so sorry.
I wish he would shut up and stop apologizing. Right.
You should go, he tells me.
I do what he asks of me. I grab my backpack and quietly leave the classroom, although my head is spinning even more than before. As I walk away down the dim hallway, I try to make sense of it all. Mr. Bennett is the sexiest teacher in the whole school. Everybody knows it. And he's married to a grown woman who I would assume he has sex with. But for some reason, while I was hugging him, he was getting turned on. By me. And then he told me that he's never connected to anyone like he has to me. The weird part is that I was thinking the exact same thing. I freeze in the middle of the hallway. I don't know what to do next, but I can't leave right now. I have to figure out what just happened in there. I owe it to both of us. I turn around and walk back to the classroom. Nobody is around the school anymore. All the clubs have ended, though some of the teams are still meeting outside in the field. Mr. Bennett is sitting at his desk, and when he looks up at me with his soft brown eyes, it feels like the two of us are the only people in the entire school, in the entire world. Hi, I say.
Addie, he frowns. I don't think we should talk about this anymore. Like I said, I am incredibly sorry.
But I want to talk about it. Mr. Bennett stands up. He can't conceal that he's still turned on. He stares at me across the room.
Close the door, he instructs me.
I do as he says. I float across the room until I'm standing right in front of him. He's about half a head taller than me, and I have to tilt my head to look up at him. His lips look moist. There were moments with Hudson when I felt a stirring inside me, but never anything like this. This is like that. On steroids.
I'm trying to resist you, he murmurs. You have no idea how badly I'm trying.
You don't have to. I thought that I would be the one to have to make the first move. So I'm surprised when it is Mr. Bennett who lowers his lips onto mine. It's the first time I've kissed a boy, well, a man. At first, it's just his lips on mine. But then a few seconds later, his tongue enters my mouth. I always knew in my head that people kiss with tongue, but I never imagined how it would feel. At first, it feels super weird, like some alien object worming its way inside me. And I'm not sure I like it. I almost want to pull away, but he's holding me tight, close to his body. And also, it would be lame to pull away. He'd be so disappointed. And then, after a few more seconds, my body starts to tingle. And it's incredible. My whole body feels like it's on fire, like it's an explosion. I don't want it to ever stop. But then he pulls away.
"This is wrong," he says.
That makes me angry. Yes, he's my teacher, and he's a lot older than me. And married. Okay, that sounds bad. But at the same time, we connect. When two people connect on the same level we do, don't they have a responsibility to do something about it, no matter what the circumstances? "I don't think it's wrong," I say.
"It is."
His brows bunch together.
"But I can't resist you. I'm helpless."
"I can't resist you. I'm helpless." My only fear is that we could get caught. Look at what happened to Mr. Tuttle, and nothing like this ever went on with him. But maybe that's the difference. Mr. Tuttle and I weren't doing anything wrong, so we weren't careful. But Mr. Bennett and I will be careful. Like he's reading my mind, Mr. Bennett looks anxiously at the door.
"We shouldn't do this here."
"I know a place." He looks surprised, but he follows me dutifully out the door to the classroom. There is a place in the school that nobody else knows about where two people could be alone. I took photography last year as an elective, and the class was all digital, but it didn't used to be. There's a dark room set up next to the classroom that kids used to use to develop photos, but now it's just a small empty room with a large sink and old chemicals. Maybe someday it will be repurposed for something, but now it's a haven of privacy. I close the door behind us.
"You're really something, Addie,"
he breathes. He loosens his tie and undoes the first button on his collar as my heart skips a beat. He's not going to take off his shirt, is he? The thought of it makes me uneasy. But thankfully, he stops after that first button. "I'm glad you like the room, Mr. Bennett," I say. He grins at me.
"You don't need to call me Mr. Bennett when we're in here."
"Oh, I feel stupid. Obviously, if we are going to be making out in the dark room, I shouldn't be calling him Mr. Bennett. Nathaniel, then?" It feels so strange saying his first name. Even after kissing him, saying Mr. Bennett feels more normal to me. He grins at me.
"Most people call me Nate, but it's your choice."
"I like Nathaniel," I say thoughtfully.
"Okay," he agrees. "And how about you? Do you prefer Adeline?"
His smile widens.
"Sweet Adeline."
I have always hated the name Adeline, but I like the way it sounds on his lips. Sweet Adeline. Except it's not really true, is it? There's nothing sweet about what we're doing in this dark room. I prefer Addie.
"You got it?"
He cocks his head at me.
"Back in the classroom, was that your first kiss?"
My face burns. I hate for him to think of me as being inexperienced, but I don't want to lie to him. I get the feeling he knows when I'm telling the truth.
"You just seemed uncomfortable at first," he says quickly.
"For real? That is not what I wanted to hear, even though he's technically right. Was I bad at it?"
"No, no. You were amazing."
He shakes his head.
"And it doesn't matter if it was your first kiss or not. Forget that I asked that.
I just,
I feel bad. I don't want you to do anything you don't want to do.
I tilt my chin up to him. I want to do this. He hesitates for another split second, considering my answer. Then he pushes me against the table used to place developed photos, and he kisses me again. Chapter 38. Addie. We spend the next 40 minutes in the dark room, and then Nathaniel, drives me home after. It's a bit risky, but if he doesn't drive me home, I'm going to be late, and my mom is going to totally freak if she gets home from her shift and I'm not there. So it's a risk we need to take. As we drive home, I can't stop thinking about what happened in that dark room. The way Nathaniel, touched me. The feel of his lips on mine set every single nerve in my body on fire. And really, all we did was kiss. He didn't even try to do more than that. He told me he wasn't going to. This is all I dreamed of doing with him. That's how sweet he is. He doesn't care if all we do is kiss. He just wants to be with me because we have this connection. When we stop at a red light, he reaches over and takes my hand in his. He flashes me a nervous look.
Is this okay? He asks.
I squeeze his hand back to show him it is. Yes. His shoulders relax.
Sorry. It's new territory for me. Honestly, I feel like a bad person. I'm your teacher.
I was the one who made the first move, I point out. You told me to go away. He lets out a long sigh, taking his eyes briefly off the road to look over at me.
I married Eve because it was expected of me to settle down. I never met anyone genuinely special before. And now I'm 38, and I'm meeting my soulmate for the first time. And she's only 16.
He grimaces.
How cruel is this universe?
He just called me his soulmate. It's wild because I feel the exact same way. But I would have thought I was imagining it if he hadn't said it. You can't help who you form a connection with, right?
Believe me, I wish everyone thought about it the way you did. But they're not going to understand.
He's right. If anyone finds out about this, he would get fired. And I'm pretty sure my life would get much worse as well. I won't tell anyone.
You have no idea how much your presence in my life has changed me,
he says.
Before you came along, I was completely blocked. And now I'm writing poetry again, for the first time in a long time.
That's incredible, especially because all I want to do is write poems about Nathaniel Bennett. I want to fill a whole notebook with verses about the way the lines crinkle around his eyes. Will you show me one of your poems?
It's all I want to do.
He smiles.
Eve, she has no interest in my poetry. She never did. Everything with her has to be practical. And she thinks poetry is such a waste.
I never liked Mrs. Bennett, but now I almost feel like I hate her. Nathaniel loves poetry. What kind of wife wouldn't be supportive of that? Nathaniel pulls up on the curb a full block away from my house.
I don't think I should get closer than this.
I nod, knowing he's right. I hate that we have to hide, but there's also something exciting about it. It's fine.
Addie.
He reaches out to touch my face, and he pulls away at the last second.
You can't tell anyone about this. Not a soul. Not your mom, not your friends. Nobody.
I won't.
I mean it.
He stares at me through the shadows in his car.
My entire career is in your hands. I'm counting on you.
He had pulled his hand away during the drive, and I reach out to take it now. You can trust me. I can tell how badly he wants to kiss me, but we both understand the wisdom of not kissing in a car in the middle of the street, even under the cloak of darkness. We can steal moments in the dark room, but that's it. Anything else would be too big a risk. But maybe it won't always be that way. Maybe there will be a time in the future when we can be together. Chapter 39. Eve. I am grading test papers on the living room sofa when Nate comes home. The front door slams, and a second later, he is standing in front of me in the middle of the living room.
"Hey," he says.
"Hey." I smile at him briefly, then go back to grading papers. I'm leaving to meet Jay in an hour, and I'm hoping to get through a large chunk of the midterms. "Don't forget I'm going out tonight." Nate plops down next to me on the sofa. He smiles at me. He looks so dazzlingly handsome when he smiles.
"What are you doing?"
"Grading midterms." He tugs the stack of papers out of my hands.
"Feel like taking a break?"
"What?" I genuinely don't know what he's talking about until I see the look on his face. He tosses my exam papers on the coffee table and grabs me, pushing me down onto the sofa. His lips descend on mine, and he kisses me roughly.
"Whoa!"
I struggle to get out from under him. "Nate, I'm in the middle of something."
"So what?"
He silences my protest with another kiss.
"You can do that later."
This is so wild. Usually we have sex like a dozen times the entire year, and now suddenly he wants me 2 days in a row? And his behavior seems strange. It almost feels like he's hungry for me, like he's ready to rip my clothing off, which is unusual for him. I haven't seen this kind of passion from him in so many years. I don't know what's going on. Does he have a brain tumor? Because that's the only thing I can think of to explain this. I would probably go to the bedroom with him if I didn't have plans for tonight. But the truth is, I'm looking forward to seeing Jay. I don't want to cancel, although I've never had a dilemma like this before. "Nate," I forcibly push him off me. "Maybe, could we do this another time? I want to get through these papers before I go out."
"Seriously?"
"Yes." Nate looks at me in disbelief as he allows me to disentangle myself from his embrace.
"I don't get you, Eve. You're always whining that we don't have sex enough, and now I want to do it, and you're pushing me off you."
"Nate."
"No, forget it."
He climbs off me, a scowl on his lips.
"I'll take care of it myself, then."
I jump off the couch, calling his name as he storms off. The bedroom door slams upstairs, and now I'm the one staring in disbelief. What on earth was that all about? Chapter 40. Addie. The meetings of reflections used to be the best part of my day, but now all I want is for it to be over so that I can sneak off with Nathaniel to the dark room.
"This whole poem," Lotus says to me, "it's too sappy."
"Sappy?" I repeat. The poem she's looking at is the one that I wrote while thinking about Nathaniel. It's a love poem, but I didn't think it was sappy. "Your eyes are brown, like freshly fallen autumn leaves. I crave your embrace in the misty night. I see you every day, but when I can't be with you, I long to be in your arms. My love for you is like a black hole. It is so deep, and I can't stop falling."
"Yeah?"
She crinkles her nose.
"I mean, look at this. My love for you is like a black hole."
"Seriously, Addie?
It sounds like some lovesick teenage girl wrote it. You don't usually write shit like this."
I snatch the poem away from her, my face on fire. I had been considering showing Nathaniel the poem today, but now I'm not so sure. I didn't think it was sappy. I didn't think it made me sound like a lovesick teenage girl. But then again, Lotus knows her stuff.
"I'm just trying to help," Lotus says.
"You need to have thick skin if you want to be a writer.
People are going to tell you way worse stuff than that.
Yeah. I look across the room, where Nathaniel is talking to another student. He notices me watching him, and he flashes a ghost of a smile. I guess you're right. She looks down at her watch, noting that it's 4:30 now. The meeting is just about over. Thank God. Hey, she says. You want to go grab some pizza? It's the first olive branch Lotus has extended to me in a long time. Except I don't want it. Becoming friends with Lotus would make it harder for me to meet up with Nathaniel. And no friendship is worth jeopardizing that. I have to be home for dinner, I tell her.
Oh, okay.
Lotus looks disappointed, which surprises me. I thought she hated me. Well, let's go then. She grabs her bag, swings it over her shoulder, and waits for me. Except I can't leave with Lotus. I'm not missing my opportunity to be with Nathaniel. Actually, I say, I need to talk to Mr. Bennett about something real quick. Maybe I'll catch up with you later. Lotus gives me a funny look, but she doesn't push me further. She doesn't really have interest in being friends with me. I let her leave first, but I don't wait for Nathaniel. I leave the classroom and go directly to the dark room. After all, it would look suspicious if we keep sneaking in there together. While I wait for him, I smooth out the creases on my shirt and run my fingers through my hair. The last time we were in here, which was our third time, I took off my shirt, but I was kind of embarrassed about my bra. It was this tan-colored utilitarian bra that was basically the opposite of sexy. I wish I could take off my shirt and be wearing something cute and lacy, but I don't own anything like that, and it's not like I can get my mom to buy me a sexy bra. If I even asked for it, she would probably ground me on the spot. Mostly, we have just kissed, and he put his hands on my breasts. Other times we will just talk, and sometimes he recites poetry for me. He knows so many poems by heart, including his personal favorite, The Raven. He is super patient with me, and he keeps telling me that we don't have to do anything I don't want to do. He just wants to be with me. He told me it was okay if we never had sex. I think we probably will someday. But I love that he is so patient. While I'm waiting, my phone buzzes inside my jeans pocket. I pull it out and notice a message waiting for me in SnapFlash. A lot of kids use SnapFlash so their parents won't invade their privacy and read all their text messages. But I only use it to communicate with one other person, Nathaniel. It was his idea, because the text messages disappear after 60 seconds. It's the safest way to communicate. I read the message that he sent to me.
Just finishing up. We'll be there in 2 minutes.
I stare at the message until it disappears from the screen. I love the messages he sends me. Every time I get one, I read it and reread it for the entire 60 seconds. After the message vanishes, I take out the poem I wrote for Nathaniel and read it one more time. Lotus said it was sappy, but I don't think it is. It really does feel like my love for Nathaniel is this endless black hole. Lotus just doesn't understand because she has never been in love. Really, I feel sorry for her. The door to the dark room cracks open, and I get that jolt of excitement like I always do practically any time I see Nathaniel. But especially in here, because I know he's going to touch me. And I love the way his face lights up when he sees me.
Addie, he breathes. My sweet Adeline.
Hi. I always feel weirdly shy when he comes in here. It takes me a few minutes to warm up. How are you?
Really good now that I'm here.
He crosses the small space and wastes no time in kissing me.
Good thing he doesn't get shy. And there's something I want to show you.
What is it? In the dim light, his cheeks color.
I wrote a poem for you.
This absolutely takes my breath away. He wrote a poem for me? How could that be? I'm not the kind of person who men write poems for. And yet he means it. Nathaniel Bennett wrote me a poem. I'm going to faint from happiness.
Do you want to hear it?
He asks, now shy himself. I nod. Very much. He pulls a scrap of notebook paper from his pocket. I recognize his handwriting now, and I can see the scribbles on the page. Words he wrote just for me. I listen in rapt attention as he recites the verses.
Life nearly passed me by, then she, young and alive, with smooth hands and pink cheeks, showed me myself, took away my breath with cherry red lips, gave me life once again.
When he finishes the last line, I can barely breathe myself. It's such a beautiful poem. Nobody has ever written anything like that for me before. Hudson was my friend, but he was no poet. Even if something had happened between the two of us, he never would have written anything like that for me. I love it, I whisper. So much.
I mean it, he says softly. You gave me my life back. You have no idea how dreary my world was before you came along.
He laces his fingers into mine, and we just stand like that for a moment, staring at each other. I can't even bear to show him what I wrote for him after hearing his beautiful verses. It seems so stupid and immature by comparison. I'll have to keep working on it until I write something worthy of him.
I think about you all the time.
He reaches out to tuck a strand of hair behind my ear.
Do you think about me?
Every moment of the day, I answer truthfully. He kisses me again, and he starts tugging my shirt off. He did this last time, so I expected it. But what I don't expect is the way he attempts to unbutton my jeans. I take a step back and smile apologetically, but he doesn't catch my eye. He is wholly focused on getting my jeans open. I take another step back, this time bumping into the table behind me, and now there's nowhere to go. Nathaniel successfully gets the button open and then lowers the zipper as I suck in a breath. He raises his eyes to look up at me.
You are the most beautiful girl I've ever met, Addie.
I hold in that breath as he tugs down my jeans and then my panties. But I don't tell him not to do it because, well, how can I? Yes, he told me he didn't care about sex, but I knew on some level it couldn't be true. I'm not totally stupid. I lose my virginity to Nathaniel in the dark room that afternoon. And the whole time, I recite his poem in my head, written just for me.
Life nearly passed me by. Then she, young and alive, with smooth hands and pink cheeks, showed me myself, took away my breath with cherry red lips, gave me life once again.
Chapter 41. Addie. Even though English is my favorite class, it's gotten harder and harder to pay attention. When I look at Nathaniel, who I have to call Mr. Bennett when we are in class together, all I can think about is how it feels when he touches me. I am counting down the seconds until we can be together in the dark room. It used to be that when we were in class together, Nathaniel would smile or wink at me. It made me feel like he thought I was special. He's careful not to do that anymore. And even though I understand why, it still drives me wild when he winks or smiles at other girls. We don't communicate at all during school hours anymore, except in the most professional way. If there's something he wants to tell me, he sends me a message through a snap flash, which vanishes after 60 seconds. I can't wait until we're alone. It's been over 3 weeks since we began sneaking off together to the dark room, nearly every day. On the days he works at the school newspaper, I go to the library and do my homework while I wait for him to be done. I suggested joining the paper myself, but Nathaniel said it was a bad idea. He said the more time we spend together in front of other people, the more likely it is they will catch on. Ever since that first time we made love in the dark room, we have done it every single time. Pretty much the first thing he does when we get inside the room is start kissing me and pull down my pants, sometimes before we've even said two words to each other. It was stupid to think all we would do is kiss. It makes him so happy. I enjoy it too, but it thrills me most how much he likes it. He says that he and Mrs. Bennett don't have sex anymore, that they haven't in a long time. When I sit in English class, struggling to focus on the lesson, an announcement blasts over the loudspeaker. I recognize Principal Higgins's voice. "Attention," she calls out. "I want to offer a big congratulations to the winner of the Massachusetts Poetry Award from our very own Kasem High." I sit up straight, my heart pounding. That is the poetry contest that Nathaniel entered me in, the one where he chose my poem out of all the others to feature. He was only allowed to choose one, so if the winner is from our school, that means I won. I actually won a prestigious statewide poetry contest. The principal continues, "We would like to congratulate Mary Pickering." "What? Mary Pickering? That's Lotus." But he didn't enter Lotus in the competition. That's why she was so upset. So I don't understand. How could she have won if he didn't even enter her? I look over at Nathaniel, but he is looking away. It's like he's refusing to catch my gaze. If I couldn't concentrate before, it's about 1,000 times worse now. I don't understand what happened. He told me he entered me in that contest. Was he lying? No, Nathaniel would never lie to me. We know each other too well for that. Except I can't come up with another explanation. I try to catch him after the bell rings, but he takes off like a flash, and I'm left behind, my head still spinning. We're supposed to meet after he's done with the school paper, but I can't wait that long. So I grab my phone and send him a message in Snap Flash. "What happened? I thought you entered me in that contest." Thankfully, his reply comes soon after.
"I promise I'll explain everything when we meet."
I stare at the words on the screen, which don't explain anything. But at least he admits he has explaining to do. On top of that, he ends up being 20 minutes late for our liaison in the dark room. I stand there waiting for him, getting more and more irritated. And when the door finally opens, I'm ready to jump out of my skin.
"Addie."
He reaches for my hands to try to bring me close to him.
"I am so glad to see you. It's been a long day."
When he touches me, I usually melt into his embrace, but this time I resist. I am angry at him, damn it. He owes me an explanation. "What happened with that poetry contest, Nathaniel? You told me you entered my poem."
"I know, and I am so incredibly sorry."
He hangs his head.
"You have to know you were my first choice. I loved your poem, and I think you would have won easily. But Lotus went to the principal and complained that I had chosen a poem written by a junior, when traditionally seniors are entered in the contest. I wanted to fight for you, but given my feelings for you, I was worried it was a conflict of interest. And you have a chance to be in the contest next year, but this was Lotus's last shot."
I have spent most of the past 2 hours being furious at Nathaniel, but now I realize that was misguided. Lotus was the one who went to the principal to complain. That was so low, especially considering her recent attempts at friendship.
"I am so sorry."
He places his hands on my cheeks, drawing my face to his.
"I should have fought for you. I was just scared that the second I said your name to the principal, she would see through me and know how deeply I cared for you."
Despite everything, his words warm my heart. He cares for me. Deeply. "It's okay," I finally say. "It's not your fault. I understand the position you were in."
"Oh, thank God."
His shoulders sag.
I thought you were angry at me and would never forgive me. I was going out of my mind, thinking that when I got here, you might not be here.
I wouldn't do that. He presses his lips against mine, and it makes every part of me spark with electricity. I never knew that kissing another person could be like this. I bet Nathaniel never knew it either. He talks a lot about how hard it is being married to somebody who he never felt any connection to, and how being with me is like something he has never experienced before.
You have become so important to me, Addie.
He breathes when his lips separate from mine.
We love with a love that is more than love. With a love that the winged seraphs of heaven coveted.
Annabelle Lee has been my favorite poem for many years, but I've never felt the words so deeply. After all, I have no other thought than to love and be loved by him. It almost frightens me how head over heels I am for Nathaniel. He's already my first thought when I wake up in the morning, and the last thing I think about is I'm falling asleep. When I write poetry these days, it is always about him. I am so in love with this man.
I only wish I could have met you back when I was 16,
he murmurs.
How unfair is the universe? I finally meet my other half, and I am 2 decades older than you.
At least we've found each other now, I point out. That's more than a lot of people get.
Very true.
We don't have a lot of time before both of us have to get home, and there's always the fear of being discovered, so usually we get right to it. It doesn't last long, and Nathaniel says that's normal when you like somebody as much as he likes me. I think of how happy I've been making him, and the fact that he is so miserable at home with his wife. She can't make him happy the way I do, and she's always nagging him to get home, so we can't stick around and talk like we want to. Not that things would be super easy even if he weren't married. My mother would still get suspicious if I got home too late, and nobody at school could find out, of course. But if he weren't married to Mrs. Bennett, I could go to his house and we could have sex in an actual bed instead of this uncomfortable dark room. The idea of having sex with Nathaniel in a bed seems so exciting and grown up. Plus, eventually I will graduate from high school. And I will get to date whoever I want. But if Nathaniel is still with his wife, he will be trapped.
If only Mrs. Bennett weren't around, it would be so much better.
Chapter 42. Addie. While I am sitting in the cafeteria, all alone as usual, Kenzie spills my entire lunch on the floor. To somebody not watching carefully, it looks like an accident. She passes by my table and knocks into my tray, and it falls on the floor. But that's not what happens. As she's walking by, Kenzie grabs my tray, slides it out so it's sticking off the table, then lets it drop to the floor. And the worst part is that lunch today is chilly. French fries and hot dogs would have been bad enough. But now there's a big pile of ground beef and soggy beans all over the floor that I have to clean up, because absolutely nobody will help me.
Oh my, Kenzie says as her friends giggle. Sorry about that.
But Addie, you really need to be a little bit more careful about putting your tray so close to the edge of the table. I glare at her as I jump out of my seat and snatch my tray off the floor. I have some napkins on the table, but it's obviously not going to be enough. As I'm crouched on the ground, Kenzie picks up the notebook I had on the table. She is reading a piece of paper on top of the notebook, and my stomach sinks. That piece of paper contains the poem that Nathaniel wrote just for me. I had a hard morning, and I knew I wasn't going to see him later because Mrs. Bennett is making him come home early for some stupid dinner, and it makes me feel good to have a piece of him with me. So I was reading it over and over and over until my eyes felt like they were going to bleed.
What is this?
Kenzie blurts out. She shakes the piece of paper violently enough to crumple it. Nothing. I snatch the poem out of her hands before she does any serious damage. It's just a poem. Who wrote it?
I would love to tell her that Nathaniel Bennett is the author of the poem, and he wrote it for me because I am the first person who has inspired him in many years. But of course, I can't tell her that. So I just say, I don't know, I copied it out of a book. She narrows her eyes at me. You should get that mess cleaned up. And like I said, next time be more careful. As Kenzie and her friends walk away, laughing to each other, I look down at the piece of notebook paper in my hand. I wince at the smudge of chili in the corner of the page. It would have killed me if she did anything to damage this poem. I read it at least 4 or 5 times a day, even though I have memorized it by now. Life nearly passed me by. Then she, young and alive, with smooth hands and pink cheeks, showed me myself, took away my breath with cherry red lips, gave me life once again. I imagine him writing these words on the page and thinking about me. I look at it so many times. The paper is getting torn and now has a smudge of chili on it. But if I photocopy it, it won't be the same. It won't be the same paper he wrote on himself when he was thinking about me. After I use about a gazillion paper towels to clean up the mess on the floor, I get back in line for attempt number 2 at lunch. I don't have time to deal with another plate of chili, but I could grab a sandwich and eat it in the hallway on my way to math class. I barely got any of that chili in my stomach before Kenzie spilled it, and I skipped breakfast this morning, so I've got to eat something. At least the lines have cleared out because there's less than 10 minutes left in the lunch period. I grab one of the wrapped turkey sandwiches, which I don't really like, but my options are limited at this point. I bring it to the cash register, and the lunch lady tells me it costs $2. I dig into my jeans pocket and pull out my wallet. I have exactly $1 bill. I only have $1, I tell the lunch lady. She looks utterly unsympathetic. Sorry, the sandwich is $2. Can I pay you tomorrow? I'm afraid not. Great. I have eaten exactly 2 spoonfuls of chili all day, and now I've got to go and try to learn math? But the worst part is that I won't get to see Nathaniel later. I could deal with anything if I knew I had that to look forward to. He looked as miserable as me when he told me he had to come home early to help his wife with dinner. Apparently, they're having some friends over, although he added, they're really her friends. I look longingly at the turkey sandwich, my eyes welling with tears. I can't believe I'm about to cry over a turkey sandwich. I feel slightly ridiculous, but I am really, really hungry.
Here's the dollar, Vera.
An arm brushes past me, holding out a dollar bill. I look up, and it's Hudson. His white blonde hair is messy as always. My mouth hangs open. Oh, I say. You don't have to.
Yes, I do.
He says in that way he does that makes me know I can't argue with him.
You have to eat lunch.
Vera accepts his dollar, and now the sandwich is mine, free and clear. I'll pay you back, I promise him.
It's a dollar.
Except a dollar isn't just a dollar to him. Probably not even now. Hudson's family was always scrimping for money. If he wanted an allowance, he had to go out and earn it with part-time jobs. Even in grade school, Hudson was always shoveling snow, raking leaves, and mowing lawns for everyone on his block. Still, there's no point in arguing with him. Thank you, I say, though I can't help but add, you better not tell Kenzie about that. He doesn't respond. Instead, he says,
Are you okay, Addie?
I'm good, I say, and it's closer to being true than it's ever been in the past. Hudson was my best friend, and I'm itching to tell him that I'm in love for the first time ever, but I can't do that. I can't tell anyone this secret. How about you?
Good,
he says, and there's a catch in his voice that makes me wonder if it's a lie. But before I can say another word, the bell rings. Lunch is officially over, so I'm going to be eating this sandwich to go. See you later, Hudson, I say. Thanks for the sandwich. He opens his mouth as if to say something else, but before he can, I dash off in the direction of math class. I'm hoping to arrive with at least a few minutes to eat my sandwich before class starts. By some miracle, I land in my seat right before the next bell is set to ring. My stomach lets out a little growl, and I put my sandwich down on the desk and unwrap it. I have about 2.5 minutes left to devour this. Addie, Mrs. Bennett's sharp voice interrupts me before I can take a bite. No food in my classroom. Put that away. I just need to finish the sandwich, I explain. There is a smattering of giggles, but Mrs. Bennett does not look amused. Not that I was trying to be amusing. I just want my freaking sandwich. Put it away, Addie. But I didn't have lunch. Whose fault is that? She sighs loudly. The bell is going to ring any second. Put the sandwich away. I weigh my options, trying to figure out if it's worth it to gobble down the sandwich even if she's yelling at me not to. If I do it after she scolded me, she'll probably send me to the principal. And I'm already skating on thin ice with Mrs. Bennett. Because of that zero on the midterm, she has every right to fail me. And even though I've been going to tutoring sessions, a miracle isn't going to happen here. If I pass the class, it will be with a D. Mrs. Bennett is legitimately a terrible person. And I'm not saying that just because of my relationship with Nathaniel. Although he has told me a lot of things about her that have made me like her even less. She's a terrible cook. She hardly ever smiles at him or says anything kind. She has this obsession with shoes. He says she's constantly buying expensive shoes, even though they can't afford it. Even if he did divorce her someday, he wouldn't have any money left because she has spent it all on shoes. And the weird part is her shoes aren't even that nice. They're like just ordinary shoes. And now she won't let me eat my lunch. The bell hasn't even rung yet. And if she had just let me eat, that turkey sandwich would be in my belly right now. Instead, my insides feel completely hollow, and I don't know how I'm going to concentrate. She didn't care about that, though. Not that I would expect it. I asked Nathaniel once if he would consider leaving her. He said it would be difficult. He said it would be very unlikely that she would let him go. He said he thinks he might be stuck with her for the rest of their lives.
I wish it didn't have to be this way, believe me, he told me. I wish I could be with you all the time instead of her.
It's not fair. It's not fair that such a terrible woman is married to the greatest guy I've ever met, and she doesn't even appreciate him. Yet she'll never let him go. Honestly, I hate Mrs. Bennett.
Chapter 43. Eve. Dinner with Shelby and her husband seemed like a good idea when we scheduled it, but I had a miserable time. When I first started working at the high school, Shelby and I were close. But since then, she married a wealthy tech genius husband, and now she's got a 3-year-old son who is all that she can talk about. Throughout the entire meal, Justin couldn't keep his hands off Shelby, which brought more attention to the fact that Nate didn't seem to even want to touch me. The only positive is that at least Nate isn't balding like Justin is, though I actually find bald heads sort of sexy. So I am incredibly glad when Shelby says she has to get back for the babysitter and declines dessert. Nate looks relieved as well, though he was doing a great job holding up his end of the conversation. One thing the two of us apparently agree on is that we hate socializing. I walk Shelby and her husband to the door, and the two of us linger